Welcome to another Chock D podcast, more than your normal martial arts gym. Today we're going to be talking about a couple of issues that people have asked me to discuss on Facebook. The first one is about kind of setting up a gym, and then we're going to be talking a little bit about sport psychology. So here we go. First question I got asked was asking about people setting up a gym. Now there seems to be quite a growth in martial arts and certainly in Thai boxing and stuff like that. And a lot of people are doing maybe a year, 2 years, 3 years of training and then setting up a gym. Now, With the best will in the world, yeah, it's cool, it's okay, it's getting the message out there, it's getting more people involved in the sport, and the more people that get involved in the sport, the more exposure we get, the more drive there'll be to kind of get some top level fights on TV and more exposure and things like that. So yeah, it's a good thing that more people are getting involved. However, there's a little bit of a kind of underlying issue, a certain niggle, because the guy that asked me to talk about it was saying about people that come in and they start training to do maybe a year or 2 years of training, and then move on to then call themselves an MMA striking coach and stuff like that. Now, again, this is kind of like the watering down. The purists in the sport, they appreciate that there's certain levels. Now, these certain levels mean that it's relatively easy to teach how to throw a punch, how to throw a kick, a knee, an elbow. There's a little bit more intricacy to the to the techniques of kind of counter striking and clinch work and stuff like that. The stuff that you probably learn through A, experience, and B, being in the sport for longer. You start observing, you start watching fights a little bit more with a little bit more depth, and then you start realizing that there's more to this than the simple punch, kick, knee, and elbow. More than these eight tools being used. Now, I kind of went through the same thing. Back in, I think it must have been about 2000, 2001. I was training at Bad Company. I'd had a few fights and stuff like that. I was traveling over to Bad Company twice a week, and I wanted to get more training. I thought it'd be a good idea to kind of replicate what we were doing at Bad Company, run a class over in York. And just say, yeah, we'll kind of crack on from there, just to get more ring time in, more mat time in. And I spoke to Richard Smith about it, spoke to my coach about it, and he was saying, well, you could do, but really it's not the right time. And given my naivety, I didn't understand why he said I wasn't ready. Now, like we've just been saying, I thought that there was more to it than a simple, I didn't realise there was more to it than the simple punch, kick, knee and elbow and just being fit and banging pads more and stuff like that. When I talked to Richard Smith about this, we started talking about this thing called, and I now refer to it as invisible Muay Thai. To coin a phrase from some of the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guys that I've been working with over the past couple of years, there's invisible Thai boxing as well. It's these intricacies, it's these little balance disturbers and ring craft and sneaky techniques that people don't realise that they end up falling into these traps, falling into these strategies. When someone throws a technique at you, so for instance, we'll talk about someone throwing a body kick. Now, if someone throws a body kick at you, Okay, yes, it's dead simple. Lift up your shin block, and keep your hands up, and then you've blocked the kick, you've defended the kick, you've defended the technique. However, there's a lot more to blocking a kick than simply lifting your shin block. We can start looking at the intricacies of balance on the standing leg. Are you coming up onto the ball of your foot when you're blocking that kick? Are you keeping your hips engaged, keeping your hips strong? Are you leaning into it? Are you leaning away from it? Are you keeping your chin down? What are you doing with your other arm? What part of your shin are you blocking with? Are you blocking high up on the shin? Are you blocking low down on the shin? Are you blocking with your knee? Are you blocking with your forearm? Are you reacting quick enough? What's slowing you down? Now, all these things are skills that you only learn through repetition or with a really good coach. Now, you're able to kind of break down these techniques and break down these finite details, and you learn to observe what's the key point, what's the gem of information. Now, whenever I trained with Thai fighters and stuff like that, when I went over to Thailand and stuff and worked with a new guy or had a personal training session with a Thai guy over here in the UK, there was always going to be that one gem. Now, I trained with a Thai fighter called Duao Kongedom. He came over to Bad Company, and it was about probably 18, 19, something like that. He was a really, really high level Raj Dhanman Stadium champion, and there was. It gets to a point where, yes, there's a certain value in just hitting pads, but until they can analyze your technique to the point where they find out what the little tweak is that's required, the little tweak that's required to your technique that will double your power. Now, this is why all my guys, they all kick really hard, they all punch really hard, because we've been able to analyze and look at the specifics of how they're engaging the hips and the biomechanics of what's actually going on, and you can see the development and movement, and then they move more fluidly. This is the crux of coaching. It's not just doing more, it's about training smart. And the thing is that if you've only been in the sport for 3, 4, 5 years, you don't have the experience in order to analyze technique to that level of integrity, to that level of detail, to be able to see what the key points are. And I think this is what the problem is when guys train for a couple of years, they come out and they'll maybe have one or two fights, and then they set up their own gym, or they go and work with an MMA gym and call themselves a striking coach because they've had a couple of Thai boxing fights. Well, yeah, the purists, the guys that have been in Muay Thai for like 10 years plus, probably look at it and say, well, what's this young gun doing, having the right to be a striking coach in an MMA gym when they haven't got the experience? And that's what it is. It's all about having the depth of knowledge and the depth of experience and going through those challenges. And you only do it by spending your time, spending the ring time, getting the mat time in there, spending those hours and hours of repetition. This is the bugbear when the sport starts getting watered down. And if it starts getting watered down, it's like radioactive decay. Like what's the half-life to reduce the to half the level of skill. Now, the thing is that there was a the golden era of Muay Thai back in the sort of mid 80s to early 90s. The Thai boxing skill at this time was at a phenomenal level. I got the opportunity to train with Rajasak Savarupin with the back end of his fighting career, back in the sort of mid to late 90s, and at that time I was a British champion, and he was saying, yeah, you're a 10%, you're 10% along your journey. This was around the same sort of time that I thought that I was kind of complete, and this radically changed my mindset and my view on how far down the path I was, how much I had to learn. I thought I was probably maybe 70-80% of the way there to being a complete fighter, being a true Muay Thai stylist. And even now, the more you learn, the more you realize that you don't know. And yeah, even though Rajasak was saying, like, at the back end of my career, like 80%, getting up to that 80% after 15-20 years of Thai boxing, I still feel that last kind of 20% is going to be, this is why people stay in it for another 20 years to get that last 20%. It's like, it's harder and harder to get these little gems of information to get to the level of being a complete fighter, being a complete coach. And I think it's a recognition of this detail that the new guys don't understand. These guys that come in and have a couple of fights and then set up as a striking coach or go off and do their thing, then okay, fair enough. Yeah, they're gonna do their thing and they're gonna maybe set up their own gym or maybe set up being a striking coach at an MMA gym or something. Then yeah, okay, it happens. But this is the watering down of the art, as opposed to people that stick with it and get their ring time, get their mat time, get that experience. And this is the difference between a good coach and someone that'll just let you hit pads. When I was fighting, I started off and I was running. I could have been running like 50-60 miles a week, One evening I went down and I was in Fitness First. I was running on a treadmill and this guy came up and started on the treadmill next to us, and he set it 1 mile an hour faster than I was going. I was like, oh, okay, so it's a race, is it? We're on treadmills next to each other. It's kind of like a big dick competition. It was like he's going 1 mile an hour faster, so I went 1 mile an hour faster, and then we're both going faster and faster, racing each other. It was like there was no glances, no eye contact, merely an eye contact towards the other person's screen. And every time he pushed the level up, I pushed the level up. Every time I pushed the level up, he pushed the level up, until we were both maxing out on the treadmills. We were both absolutely belting it. Other people were like kind of stopping and watching us. It was hilarious. And then after maybe like 5 minutes or something, we both like kind of looked at each other, nodded, acknowledged it with a smile, and we both kind of started to wind it back down again. And it was a funny start, funny experience, funny time. And this prompted my conversation with him. It turns out that this guy had won like three or four of the York marathons, and he was one of the lead runners for Knavesmire Harriers and stuff like that, the local marathon running team, and he was one of the best guys in the area at long distance running at speed. And we started talking, and it was like, "Oh man, you're faster!" Yeah, cheers, thank you. And I was like, "Oh, what do you do? You're obviously sports." He says, "Oh, I'm a marathon runner." I started laughing, and he says, "Oh, what do you do?" He says, "Oh, I'm a Thai boxer." And he's like, "Oh, bloody hell, you're fit and you run well for being a Thai boxer." He says, "Oh, how much mileage do you do in a week?" I said about 50, 60 miles. He was like, "Jesus, that's more than me, and I'm a marathon runner." And this was like a light bulb moment to me. It was one of those times where I was like, wow, okay. It's not about spending your time in there. It's about training smart. And this is when I started to change my tack. I started to change my direction a little bit towards my training. I started doing complementary stuff. Started doing more resistance training. And it's all, like I say, if all your task is just to be there, just to hit pads, then you're not training smart. You're just training more. And there comes a time when it's like, get to the point of diminishing returns. You're spending more and more time doing something, and it's not really giving you the benefit that you're asking for. So this is why I started to change my training, and I moved to do like more strength and conditioning work, started doing like proper interval training, and started educating myself a little bit more about the fitness side of things. Now, this isn't a blueprint of how to carry over and be a better coach. This was merely my story and merely my experience. A coach educates himself to the level where they can point and direct skill, and they can point and direct attention and see where the point of diminishing returns is. You can see where people are wasting their time, or they could be training more effectively. These are the things that make a good coach. So, and you only get that by being in it. Now, and this is why I think it's important for a coach to also be a fighter as well. If they've been a fighter in the past, I'd say probably to the point where I'd had maybe 20, maybe 30 fights, I was getting to a point where I'd experienced like 20 to 30 different styles of fighters and had different training experiences. I'd had good fight camps, bad fight camps. I'd had diet problems and had like training problems and things like that. And it's only through problems where you get your physical learning from. So I think this is an important skill, and I think it's an important thing that people are educated to the level where there's a validity to their coaching, not just they've done 1 or 2 years or one or two years of training and hit a few pads for a while. Yeah, they may know the academics of throwing a punch, a kick, but it's that invisible Thai boxing, that invisible Muay Thai that we're talking about. And I think this is what makes the difference between a good coach and a bad coach, someone that's has that experience. And if you haven't got that experience, then I'm sorry, but it's going to be they're going to be a plastic coach. They're going to not have the depth. They're not going to have the integrity. And it's important that in order to maintain the quality in the style and in the art form, then you have to spend the time. That's the long and short of it. In order to get any credibility, then you have to spend the time, and that's what we're talking about. That's what we're striving for, and I think this is why a lot of more experienced coaches get riled by these people that are watering down the skill. So hope that answers your question. And in a second, I'll put another podcast out, and we'll do one on a bit of flow state, which I started to touch on a little bit in this episode. So yeah, I'll see you on the next one. All right, speak to you soon, guys. Cheers. Bye.